Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Ask Coach Mac, episode number 59. Really appreciate you guys being here with me today. Those that joined both live and on the follow-up recording episodes, as always, I'm here to answer your questions. I try to answer 3 or 4 questions each episode. And if anybody jumps on, leave your questions down below. Even if you're watching the recording, I go back and grab those questions to ask to answer on a future episode. So please just leave those down below. Appreciate everybody that supports the show by leaving ratings and reviews, like and sharing, commenting on this. It just helps me help as many coaches as I can, as well as I appreciate our sponsors, Iron Grip, Intech, Versa Pulley, Train Heroic, Samson, Sornex, Gymaware. I think I said Train Heroic already. I'm not sure who I was missing in there, but appreciate them for always helping bring these episodes to you for free. But I want to jump right into this. Again, if you have any questions, leave them down below. But I want to start off first with Dwayne. Dwayne asks, in my book, you spoke of looking the part. Is this necessary? I'm a big guy and I don't look like the athlete I used to. How do I get past the eyeball test? And, you know, Dwayne, I do think that having, you know, looking, you know, being fit is important because being fit for this profession is important and being able to demonstrate and do those types of things. But this is a very a challenging, demanding job. And so your health is very important. That said, you don't have to look like the Greek goddess, god or Greek goddess to be successful in this field. But I do think that you have to make sure that you have a great presence. I think presence is everything. You know, how you carry yourself. When I walk into a room, I make sure I command that room. I carry myself in a certain way where people want to follow. And that stems from confidence, and confidence stems from experience. And experience comes from putting myself in situations where I have to learn. And so I would encourage you to really develop that as you go. I think, you know, making sure that you position yourself in disciplines where it makes sense. So if you're a big guy, you know, if you're a former offensive lineman, then try to work with the offensive lineman, or if or possibly powerlifters. If you're a skinny guy that doesn't have a lot of muscle tone, or if you're or you're short or whatever it might be, try to identify with specific positions or sports that you fit in, and sometimes that'll help you overcome some things early on in your profession until you develop, you know, the following, the accolades, and all those types of things to be able to overcome that. So I hope that answers your question there. You had a second question where basically it's on presenting and publishing. I agree on the writing and publishing and presenting. However, I believe in my area, so I'm an old guy, there's a general demand for knowledge, and it was scarce and few. These days, almost everyone is writing about the same thing. So my question is, what do I write on, and what topics do I present on? I think, Dwayne, I think that what I've recommended people doing thus far, especially early, when you're just getting into the profession, I think writing about your experience. One thing that is a great book by Seth Godin called Tribes, and building a following. I think no matter what your profession you're in, you should develop a group of people that know, like, and trust you. And one way to do that is to be vulnerable and share your experiences. The other way is to put out great content, you know. And so I think if you can combine those two things where you're putting out, you know, if maybe you're in an internship or maybe you're in a graduate assistantship and you're writing blog posts about what you're learning in that experience, not only does that go to serve to chronicle your experience, which, you know, you're going to forget more in this profession than you ever will you know, learn. But it also helps you create a following and a group of people that maybe they're not getting the opportunity to be in as good of an internship or as good of a GA, and where they don't get as many learning opportunities that you may get. And so sharing that experience, I mean, you know, an expert is somebody that just knows more than the next person, you know, and so you know, sharing that experience, I think, is big. See a bunch of people jumping on. If you guys got any questions, you know, throw them down below. But our next question here comes from Hamish. I think that's how it's said, Hamish. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. His question is, what do up and coming SEC coaches lack when they enter the field? And Hamish, I think, you know, there's so many very, very smart, great coaches coming out each and every year. And, you know, being a guy that was a head strength coach at 23 years old, I will never say that there's not great coaches that are, you know, that are young, you know, that can make a tremendous impact. You know, that said, I think the number one thing that's lacking is that wisdom that comes with the on-the-job training. You can know everything there is in the book. You can know everything there is to read and all the credentials and all the certifications. But, you know, until you get into experiences where you have to deal with, you know, attitudes and issues and deal with coaches and deal with administration and things like that, I think it's so those are on the job training. And I think this is very much an apprenticeship type of profession where you're still having to go through those experiences. And so that's why one of the questions that I ask in my podcast is, what's the biggest mistake they've made and how they've learned from it, so that I can try to avoid some of those mistakes in my own career. Next question comes from Colin. Colin asks, what is the best way to move from volunteering to getting a full-time position? Colin, I think, you know, the best way to do that, in my opinion, is to do a great job where you're at. That's the number one thing is, you know, when you do a great job where you're at and you make it so that that the people that work with you, they're going to miss you when you're gone. And that you've brought something to the table. You've bettered their program somehow, some way. I think that is the number one way, to create a great recommendation for you moving on. And there's been many coaches that have worked for me that they've brought something to the table, and that's given me a platform when I've talked to these other coaches about how they've contributed. And usually that carries some weight that way. I think another thing that you can do is draw that 50-mile radius and go out and network. And you have to let coaches get to know you as a person, see your passion, figure out what your unique selling proposition is, and be able to convey that. We've talked about that on the show before. But you have to, you know, coaches got to know who you are. You have to check all the boxes when it comes to credentials and qualifications. And then you have to find what your niche is and how you can separate yourself out from the pack. And most of the time that comes from, you know, your experiences and people that are recommending you. So I would tap in. I think something that a lot of coaches don't do is make a list of all the coaches that you've played for that you know, you know. And so oftentimes coaches, they forget about, you know, maybe the high school coaches or college coaches. And this field is such a small field relatively. And so you never know which connection is going to get your job. So what I did, you know, one of the things that I did and I recommend to coaches is to make a list of all those coaches, send an email out to kind of, you know, letting them know. It's almost like a Christmas email where you're letting them know where you're at in your career. And every time you take a new job, you let them know where you're at and what you're doing and what your goals are. And you'd be surprised how many times coaches come out of the woodworks to help you like that. That was one of the biggest ways that I got my job at South Florida is Rod Cole. At Kansas State, I'd visited him, and he had commented and shared with Jim Levitt, the head football coach there, that I was in the area because I'd let him know that. So I think that's a huge way for you to go from that volunteer to that paid position. And it's harder than it was, for sure, but it's definitely not impossible. We take a couple quick questions here before I jump off. John Burke. John, appreciate you listening, man. You often talk about branding yourself. How can a young strength coach brand themselves? And man, that's a great question. And I think, you know, the biggest thing that I try to tell young coaches, I get this question a lot, and I don't know if that's just because I'm out there or if it's because, you know, I've written a book or whatever it may be, but I think you have to figure out what your voice is. You know, and so there's a lot of coaches that brand themselves and they do it in what I call a douchebag way, you know, where it's all about me. And, you know, I've always, you know, kind of created this online presence under the platform of education where I'm constantly trying to give back to the community somehow, some way, and finding different ways to do that, you know, shows like this. And so what I would encourage you to do is to, you know, create an online presence through social media, to create maybe a website where you chronicle and journal your experiences. Try to contribute to the body of work that's out there where maybe you find that you have a unique perspective in the industry, and you write an article on it and you share it on some platforms that are bigger than your own. And then I think the easiest way to do that is to get out and start to speak, whatever level that may be. You know, maybe it's at a local high school, maybe it's junior high football team or something, but start to get out and develop yourself as a professional, because that's what professionals do. They have the content, but then they turn around and they share the content. And so sharing your content, I think, is probably the best way for you to brand yourself. So I hope I answered your question, John. Nick, he asked, how do you gain respect from players in the collegiate setting if you did not play in college yourself? And that's, Nick, that's a great question. I think what a lot of people, this is something that I get crucified quite a bit about in my book, right? And, you know, just online, because I often say that to be a great strength coach, you have to have played the sport that you work with. I think you can be a good strength coach. I think you can be a very good strength coach. But to be a great one, I think you have to understand the challenges and have experienced what your athletes are going through. And the only way to have done that is to actually have played the sport, maybe even at that level, you know. And so that said, I do think you can overcome. That's an obstacle to overcome. I think the number one thing you can do is to show that you care about them. You know, spell love, T-I-M-E. And so what you love, you'll spend time on. And so investing in them as people, number one, is going to overcome that. Number two is, I think you need to show that you're competitive. I think by, you know, being competitive in something, maybe you're, you know, if you're not a collegiate athlete, you know, start competing in Olympic lifting or powerlifting or MMA or something where you mountain bike racing or adventure racing. Show that you have a competitive spirit, that you know how to set a goal, work to achieve that goal, and then to do it in front of people. I think those are the things that a lot of times athletes just don't have respect for, is when, you know, it's that, you know, do as I say, but not as I do, type of mentality. And so I think if you're constantly putting yourself out there as a competitor and you're investing in them individually, I think that's the number one way to get the athletes to buy into you. So, guys, I'm going to jump off here again. I want to try to keep these to, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. I'll keep jumping in each week. Again, if you're watching the rebroadcast of this, you know, post questions below. I see Mark, you know, thanks for all you do, coach. Always love listening to your podcast. Appreciate that. Appreciate all the support. And again, I truly believe that we're all in this together and just trying to help one another out along the way. And this is my way of doing that. And you know, again, there's it's not malicious at all. It's not with some sort of hidden agenda. I just like coaches and appreciate being a part of their career somehow, some way, even in a small part like it is. And so always in these episodes with a quote. Quote comes from an unknown author, and it says, "One of the best feelings in the world is knowing your presence and absence both mean something to someone." And so, again, I think making an impact on people, making an impact on our athletes, making an impact in our organizations and our, you know, our coworkers, I think that's all we can do on a daily basis. And if we're not doing those things, then honestly, why are we doing what we do? And so hope that helps, guys. Look forward to the next one. Appreciate everybody. Talk to you later. See ya.